The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to Report from Asia. This is Mike Consul, and our guest is Milan Khatri. He is head of research at Phoenix Property Investors based in Singapore, and he joins us by telephone from Singapore. Milan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's great to be speaking to you.
And, you know, we wanted Milan to join us on the program because he recently wrote a market perspective piece in Institutional Real Estate Asia Pacific. The headline is The Future of Urbanization. And the subheadline says, history suggests major cities and the office sector will continue to thrive in a post-pandemic world. This is one of the things a lot of people have been obsessing about, certainly people in the office sector, investors in the office sector, operators, they're wondering, will office really come back? Then there's been a lot of thematic investing in the whole urbanization trend. And we have people saying, well, maybe that's over because now people are afraid of cities or feeling like cities are a little too dangerous because there's so many people in close proximity to one another, which is not a good thing when you have pandemics. And it does seem in the last 20 years, we've seen a lot of viruses break out that have been very threatening, nothing as widespread as a coronavirus. But unfortunately, the coronavirus isn't as the mortality rate's not as high as some of those others. But this gets us right to the heart of the matter, Milan. You tell us, what does history teach us about the resiliency of the urbanization trends that we've seen around the world? What's so resilient about cities in this trend towards urbanization?
Well, I mean, I think what we know from history is that the cities are incredibly resilient. They've been hit by many shocks of many different types over the last 100 years plus, and yet they seem to come back and thrive. I mean, obviously, you sort of mentioned, you know, we've had viruses more recently. So in Asia, that was, for example, SARS virus back in 2003. And then again in the MERS virus back in 2015. And then obviously the big one really was the last big global pandemic was the Spanish flu back in 1918. But from all of these, cities have eventually rebounded. And I think the notable thing about the Spanish flu is just how the scale of it was just really extensive. Estimates suggest that they affected about a third of global population, which included Asia, lasted for about 18 months and killed, and the bottom end of the estimate, killed approximately 50 million people. So this was by no means small in scale. And yet what we do know is that the 1920s, which is obviously following very soon after the Spanish flu, was better known as the Roaring Twenties. And we know that cities thrived during that period. And so, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that in the short term, this is an issue, but cities eventually come back. And yeah, even with Asia's experience with SARS and MERS, which were more deadly, and it really caused a lot of fear, and yet cities really just bounced back. And so from our perspective, the way we think about this is that when it comes to real estate investing, at least in Asia, we're still very much focused on the major cities of the region. So whether that's Tokyo, Seoul, Sydney, we are still looking for opportunities in these locations.
You know, and the thing is, fear is such a tremendous human motivator. And obviously people fear virus, lethal viruses, people fear them. And you see that people have been very reactive to this one. Although over time, I know I see this right here in the United States, and I suspect this may be the case in Asia as well. Over time, people kind of get worn down and they just decide, you know, I want to live. I want to live my normal life. I want to see my friends. I want to be together. I want to attend cultural events and so on. But, you know, one of the questions I really want to ask you, Milan, about urbanization is why the trend towards urbanization at all, when you consider that technology is making it less and less necessary for human beings to actually gather together in great numbers all under one roof, because the technology isn't locational anymore. Now it's in everybody's hands. And as we've gathered together in big cities, what we have seen is real estate prices have gone very high. Urban living has become very costly. I would think that those are some dynamics there that could convince people for practical reasons, not because of fear, but simply because I can't afford to be in a big city, a first-tier city anymore, because it's just too expensive. Do you think that that creates the kind of downward pressure, the kind of dynamic that could actually get the urbanization trend to kind of peter out?
Well, I mean, on the first point, into the fear factor, I mean, I think you're right. You know, sort of when you're in the middle of it, definitely it's an issue, but I think people are being worn down. And you mentioned that I speak to friends sort of halfway around the world in London, and they tell me about their fears of ever stepping back on the underground there, the metro system. And so that's pretty real. But I think in Asia, I think the response has been here pretty positive, in the sense that people are very quickly become used to, for example, wearing masks, sanitizing their hands on a regular basis. And then from a government perspective, they put systems in place to track and trace the virus. And so there will be outbreaks. We've seen outbreaks recently in Japan, China, and South Korea. And yet I think that normalization that you speak about is actually occurring because people do want to go on with their lives. And I think the other important factor to note is that the death rate has been remarkably low in Asia when you compare that to other places globally, whether it's Europe or the US. And so I think that also partly helps from an Asian perspective to assist in terms of normalization. And the interesting fact is that when I look at population trends, and Japan is notable because we get monthly information for Japan on population trends, and even up to the month of May, so this is well past the beginning of the pandemic, the population has continued to rise in the major cities of Tokyo, Osaka, because people realize that. And when it comes to amenities, getting access to specialist healthcare, you know, cities is where it's at, you know, that's where you can get that. And in terms of the opposing forces, you know, you've got this issue of technology, absolutely. It raises a big question about, you know, do you actually even need to be living in the major cities when you can just email, video conference? But I think there are two opposing factors to think about here. One is that, yes, definitely urban locations make it easier to meet people, whereas technology means that you don't need to be located in the same location. But I think what's happened is that you've had numerous inventions over the last 100 years to the technology. You've had the phone, fax machines, if you remember those. You've got the, obviously, more recently, the internet and email, video conferencing. And actual fact, if anything, it's not diminished the cities, it's actually reinforced them. And I think what's happening here is that technology actually assists in better interaction, better quality, ability to meet people, to meet the right people at the right time, and that has a positive impact on corporates in terms of innovation and then growing their businesses. And so cities, if anything, have benefited from technology as opposed to being hurt by them. And then the other issue, obviously, you raised here is about cost, and there's no doubt that as you urbanize, things are becoming more centralized. The cost of living definitely starts to go up. And so how do you deal with that? I think you've seen it in the US to some degree, but in Asia, it's very much the trend is of significant densification of real estate. So you have limited land in urban locations. So what do? You densify, you build up, and that helps to mitigate costs to some degree. Although in some locations, that's not going to be the only answer. In major cities such as in Shanghai or Tokyo, what you have is significant suburbanization as well, or development of satellite cities. So these are commuter belt locations which can offer more affordable housing than being in a city or urban location. And so what that means from a real estate perspective, at least what we see, is that there will be always be opportunity to take maybe tired buildings to really reposition them, renovate, densify, and those opportunities we think will be around for a long time to come.
Talk about the advantages of the office. Why? I mean, you can live in an urban setting and still work from home. You're making the case that the office sector, if I'm understanding you correctly, Milan, the office sector is going to do fine. Office people invested in office real estate will do okay. But what is the compelling reason to be in an office in this day and age? Why does it still make sense, or why is there still the attraction there?
Well, I mean, in terms of sort of in the short term, we're obviously in it, whether it's Asia or even elsewhere globally, we're in the middle of a recession. And so there's no doubt, I think, in the near term, there will be a drop in office demand. You know, corporate cash flow is under a lot of pressure, and it makes perfect sense to cut back on expenses, of which offices will be one. And if you can work from home, why not, if it's a way of saving costs? But the issue and the question here is not about just how you sustain your business in the short term. It's about how then do you, over the medium to long term, grow your business as well. And I think when it comes to that component, what we do know is that home working in itself is not new. It's something which has been growing actually over the last decade or two. And there are good examples of that growth, whether it's Europe or the US. And what we know is that where corporates have really tried to implement home working, in the end, they realize that it doesn't provide the ability to innovate and grow your business in the same way as you can achieve when you're working as teams within an office environment. And so the good best example, I think, is for IBM, which have really instigated home working and been really the leaders in home working for many decades. And yet, by 2017, they decided actually they wanted everyone to go back to the office. So there's a big reversal by a technology company. And if they can't make it work, it sort of raises big questions of whether how anyone else can actually make it work over the medium to long term. And then that's sort of more from a front office perspective. But even when you think about the back office, there are examples and studies that, for example, in China, where back office teams have been offered the option of working from home. And what we've found is that, yes, they can be more productive, partly because they also work longer hours. They have less disruption. But when given the choice, a lot of back office staff would actually prefer to work from the office simply because they get more interaction, they meet people, they want to build relationships, they don't want to be lonely, which they end up being when they work from home continually. And also there's the fear of missing out, particularly, for example, for promotions. And so the office still has its place. That's not to say home working can't increase and won't increase over time, but the office still has its place. And I think we will see this industry coming back again over the medium to longer term.
Did IBM ever make a statement as to why they wanted everybody to come back to the office, or at least the majority of their workforce come back to the office? Was there any statement as to where they that they actually felt as though the remote work fell short, or why the office was a superior, kind of a superior organizational concept for them? Any statement that you can recall, Milan?
Sure. I mean, really it boils down to being able to innovate and to generate new ideas. That was the main reason that they gave for going back to the office. And so obviously, you know, this is, as I said, this is a technology company. If IBM must have access to all the tools and technology that you would have thought should be any sort of leader's disposal. And yet, even with those tools and technology, and we're talking about 2017, so that's not very long ago, they obviously made that decision to then go back to the office because they were falling behind their competitors, and they viewed the office as a way of gaining back that competitive edge.
Now, you know, I hear people talking about the virus-free office. In other words, because of some of these health concerns that we've got, office places are going to be, they're going to change. They're going to try to be touch-free. They're going to try to have air filtration systems that are very powerful and filter out viruses and other pathogens. Do you think that this is going to create the situation that we're facing right now is going to create an explosion of new office technology and perhaps even just the way offices are organized to address this? Might there be, we hear a lot about prop tech or property technology, and that's been an explosive area. There's a lot going on there, but now I'm thinking in terms of strictly from a health and wellness standpoint, are you thinking that this could be a result of all that we're going through right now?
I think definitely there will be innovation in the office sector in terms of how we think about building offices, how we configure them, and the technology we put in them. But that, again, that's not anything new. I mean, offices have evolved and they continually evolve over time. But definitely, I think this is now an opportunity to really rethink how an office is configured, all the features and facilities that they offer. I think the reality is that I don't think this alone will solve the issue in terms of the pandemic we're facing today. And so there will be, it'll be a very slow process of bringing people back to the office as they start to feel more and more comfortable. And part of the answer may simply be, while this pandemic is still around, it's not just a revolves around technologies, but what individuals do. So do they wear masks when they're in the office? Are they sanitizing, cleaning their hands? So it's not just down to technology alone. It's also how individuals approach this issue as well. And again, as I said, in Asia, certainly, there, but a lot of people are predisposed to doing this and therefore taking precautions accordingly. And so I don't think technology alone is going to be the answer until, for example, we have a cure or a vaccine in place.
What does that say then about, or what's your thoughts on co-working concepts and flexible office concepts? Are they going to be affected by this, or are you expecting that co-working and flexible office, those concepts are going to continue to be prevalent and successful?
Again, I think in the short term, the flexible office, co-working, I think this model is going to come under a lot of pressure because obviously one of the big drivers of demand for co-working space has come from smaller companies, freelancers who have, rather than working from home, which obviously we've talked a lot about, or working in a coffee shop, what they've decided is that actually, you know, they actually prefer to be in an office environment with like-minded individuals, having that ability to bounce, generate new ideas. But that part of the those companies that are ones probably have been hit the hardest by this pandemic, suffer the most, and therefore they've retreated very quickly back to working from home to just conserve cash. And so that obviously is a big issue for the business model if a lot of your customers simply cannot afford to be in that space. But what we see over the medium to long term is that the idea behind having co-working and flexible space is not going to go away. What does it do? Flexible space offers a very convenient sort of stop-start type of accommodation, which can be disposed of at very short notice. And I think a lot of corporates, medium-sized, larger corporates, understand that. And going forward, I think a lot of demand for flexible space will come from larger corporates who, you know, they'll still have their core office space, but as they grow, there will always be some degree of uncertainty over how much space they need. And so a good way of accommodating future growth will be using flexible space models. And so this is not going to go away. This is here to stay. But the drivers of that demand may change from small companies, freelancers, to medium and larger corporates going ahead.
So to the office investor, what general advice would you give to the office investor going forward? What should they be aware of? What should they be on guard against, perhaps? Just generally, what would your statement be to office investors as they look to the future if they want to stay in that office space?
I'm sort of, my view here is more focused on Asia, and I think the answers for elsewhere globally might be slightly different. But definitely from an Asian perspective, I think the core city urban environment is going to continue to thrive looking ahead. There may be a short-term blip, but that's where the demand for living and working will remain. It will remain strong. And so when they come from an office perspective, our focus is still on the major urban centers around the region, and that's where we'll be really focusing looking for new investment opportunities. But the thing I sort of noticed is, and as you've already mentioned, is there is a lot of uncertainty over what this pandemic implies for the office sector. And we believe that that in itself then may well create opportunities where investors are less certain, less sure. That may create opportunities to buy into the sector cheaply. But also, obviously, given that we're going through a major recession currently, that will have a big impact on office rents and capital values. And again, we think that in the right location, for the right type of quality building, creates an opportunity to invest into that market as the market corrects. Many other investors may believe that that correction is something that won't easily reverse or change again. Our view is different. We think the market will eventually come back. And so I think some opportunities may well arise in the next 6 to 12 months to invest in the sector. I guess the only sort of drawback which I see is in terms of when we compare this market today to previous corrections is that degree of government support, whether it's to corporates or because central bank support, which cutting interest rates and keeping borrowing costs very low, it may well be that that correction that occurs may be particularly brief, may not be particularly long-lived. That we still don't know the answer to that, but certainly this is where we're going to be looking for opportunities.
Very well. Our guest has been Milan Khatri. He is head of research at Phoenix Property Investors based in Singapore. And we've been talking really largely about a piece he wrote in the July-August edition, the current edition of Institutional Real Estate Asia Pacific. And if you log on to the IREI website and go to the search bar and plug in the future of urbanization, that article will come up. Milan, thank you very much for taking the time and the contribution to the magazine. We will hope for the best on the office sector in Asia and beyond. Appreciate your time.
No problem at all. Thank you very much, Mike.